Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer, and I am super excited about our next executive spotlight here on Office Hours. He's a man who I look up to. I wish he would run for president or at least accept one of my offers to be the CEO and president of one of my companies. But to be honest, I can't afford him for good reason, because he's the CEO and president of TaylorMade Golf, the incredible David Abeles. Welcome to Office Hours.
Great to be back, David. You know, I think the only reason you look up to me is because I'm slightly taller than you are. That's the only reason. Yeah.
That is not true. One of the reasons, because there's so many that I do look up to you, is that I believe in community. And in order to build a community, you have to build a culture. In order to build a culture, you have to be firm on your values. You have to be able to articulate daily practices for a collective. And you have to execute on those. And as leaders, that is not an easy ask, especially today with remote working, all of the noise and sounds and the social silos that exist within not only personal lives, but professional lives as well. For you, what have been some of the key ingredients to build such an amazing culture at TaylorMade, where I think you've won best culture of a company for three consecutive years?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, creating a culture anywhere, in my opinion, takes a bit of a village. I mean, certainly a leader has to identify what those values are that are important to the individual and ultimately the broader organization over time. We call it identity at times, not just culture. I think they're similar in nature, and we can unpack that a little bit in this discussion. But for the last 3 years, we have been recognized as one of the most loved workplaces in the United States by Newsweek. And the irony of that is that just a couple of weeks ago, I was doing an interview with one of the industry media sources on advanced technology and golf equipment design. And TaylorMade's now been in business for 45 years, since 1979. And there was a very provocative question that came up in this interview, which was, hey, David, when you think about all the great innovations and all the great accomplishments that have happened at TaylorMade over time, what's the single source, the single most unique or moment of pride that you have experienced in your 10 years as the CEO and your 21 years in the organization in its entirety? And the individual that was interviewing me, I think, was very much ready for me to say, oh, it must have been flight control technology in 2006, or movable weight technology in 2004, or the original Metalwood all the way back in 1980. But the reason this is provocative is my answer was very clear. The thing that I'm most proud of unequivocally is being named most loved workforce in the United States, and not just doing it once, but doing it for three consecutive years. Because you can't get to innovative practices, products, or services in your business unless your environment is conducive to leading you down that path to do that. So back to your question, we have definitive clarity in our organization around the values of the organization, which then help create the identity of the organization. So our values are very clear. If you'd like, I'll share them with you.
Please.
The first one is original. And originality really comes through the notion of how we think about the things that we do and who we are. How do we show up in front of our customer? How do we show up in front of the world of golf? How do we show up in front of our industry in a way that is uniquely different and very germane to the TaylorMade Golf brand? But it's uniquely different. And that's what innovative companies do. So we view ourselves as original. If we push content, it needs to be original content. If we create a new technology for a golf club, it needs to be a new technology that hasn't been done before that provides benefits to those who are going to consume it. If we're going to launch a service, how original is that service relative to what exists in the marketplace? What's the point of difference? So ultimately, those that are attracted or are interested in our company will find value in the things that we do. So originality is very, very important to us. The second one is competitive. I mean, we are a highly competitive organization. We're in a competitive space. We're in a competitive sport. But all of our 2,200 employees around the world look into the mirror in the morning and say, how can I be better at what I'm going to do to help the organization make progress today? Not an idea for tomorrow or 10 years from now. That comes in waves as well. But what can I do in my role today, functionally or cross-functionally, to ultimately improve the performance of the organization? And is that going to help us compete with greater leverage in the global markets? So whether you're in a commercial function, an operational function, a back office financial function, everybody has an obligation to think in that way and a desire to think in that way. And I'm going to come back to how we get to that with our people. So the competitive nature of our organization, you can probably hear it in my tone as I lean forward and talk about that.
This is why I don't play golf with him.
Yeah, the intensity in my voice picks up because we love to compete the same way Tiger, Rory, Nelly, Scotty, Colin, Tommy, all of our athletes compete every day. The third value is relatable. So as original as you may be, and as competitive as you may be, are you relatable to those who you're trying to work with? Truly relatable. And another way to look at this is through the lens of, can an individual look at David Abeles or look at David Meltzer or look at an employee at TaylorMade and say, you know, I have something in common with them and I can relate to what they're saying. And as great of an organization and as proud as I am of what we've built and the leadership platforms that we've established and the categories and brands in which we compete in, I would like to think more often than not, and we test this, we measure it, we evaluate it, that those that are engaged with us, our customers, look at us through the lens of, they're relatable to me. Their brand relates to me. Their products relate to me. When David Abeles does a show with David Meltzer, he's relatable. He's very truthful. He's transparent. There isn't a whole lot of hyperbole around the concepts in which we try to create. Not that we don't market hard and compete in the area of marketing and tell great stories, but we try to be extremely relatable, which is letting others into our organization. We live by an interesting notion in the organization. If everybody in the world of golf loved TaylorMade as much as our 2,200 employees love TaylorMade, we would be that much better. And so we work to relate to that notion. The last value, which is fascinating, and fortunately, and I think a lot of companies miss on this, when you build a culture in your organization, you actually have the right, and to some degree the obligation, but the right to define whatever values you want. Whatever values you want. And whether they're existing values that you've learned from other companies or other communities, or whether they're values that you want to create that will create differentiation or a unique point of competitive advantage for you, you can do that. We made up a word. We literally made up a word for our fourth value. And that value is golf-demistic.
Golf-demistic.
Golf-demistic. And if you mind, I'll tell you a story about golf-demism. Years ago,
I've heard of the Poptimist, which was my grandfather, who's the top of the optimist. So I called him the Poptimist.
Poptimist.
So I like Poptimist.
Funny, I call my 96-year-old father Pops. Nice. You know, and he's the ultimate Poptimist. I'm taking that from you. I learned that this
morning. I'm going to take Golftimistic.
See how relatable that is? Right. Yeah, see how relatable that is. So 4 years ago, I'm standing under this beautiful oak tree at Augusta National Golf Club on a beautiful April afternoon. The Masters is about to start. It was Wednesday before the first round of the Masters on Thursday morning. Actually, it was probably a few more. It was probably just before COVID interrupted things for a bit for all of us. And I'm standing with our chief marketing officer, who, in my opinion, is the greatest marketer in the history of golf. And I'm incredibly proud of him and the work that his team does and how we live these values through our brand literally every moment of every day. And we're having a discussion about how do we leverage the performance of our athletes in this given week to inspire the world of golf in and around their performance and their association and engagement with our products. That was the conversation under the tree. Well, another industry executive from another company came by and looked at the both of us. We've known each other for a while and says, "Hey, DA," that's my nickname. "Hey, DA," and said hello to our CMO.
It's also your initials, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So how are you guys doing? We're doing great. Yeah, we're doing great. So how about yourself? He says, "Well, you know, it's another year. Here we are under the tree at Augusta National, doing it all again. Feels a bit redundant to me." Stop me in my tracks. He left. I grabbed our CMO. I said, "Are you kidding me?
Right.
Are you kidding me? We are at Augusta National, one of the great sanctuaries of golf, right? That one of the greatest facilities in the history of the game.
Of all sports.
Of all sports. At one of the greatest major championships ever played. It's 75 degrees and sunny. We're under one of the most majestic trees, not just in golf or at golf facilities, but anywhere around the world, enjoying the start of the Masters. And there's redundancy in this?" And the pessimism and the routine nature of that comment, I felt like I needed to take a shower after it, to be honest
Good
with you. I'm
you.
Like, "You've got to be kidding me."
Yeah.
And he and I looked at each other. He says, "That's the difference between golf-demistic or truly optimistic forward-thinking companies and those that are working to survive by doing the same things every day." And that's just not who we are.
which makes you one of the most loved companies to work for. There's a subtlety in the sports business world, and I've been able to perceive it through what I call the Jerry Maguire effect. And I find, as you know, one of the greatest experiences I had was to work with Lee Steinberg, the most notable sports agent ever in history. And they made the movie Jerry Maguire about Lee and the firm. And yet so many people will come up to me and say, oh my gosh, Mr. Meltzer, Jerry Maguire is my favorite sports film. And I'll quickly respond, that's funny because it's a love story with a sports backdrop. Mm. TaylorMade is a business. It's a technology business, in my opinion, that has a sports backdrop. And when we look at the counterintuitive nature of being the most loved place to work, there's a greater challenge, believe it or not, if you're working for a professional sports organization, a company in sports, because our expectations are that our love for sports is going to take away the fact that it's an activity we get paid for. And there's a reason we're paying people for that activity, because it's not necessarily the joy of going and watching the Masters under the most majestic tree of all time on the first day, 75 degrees of the Masters. How do you manage the expectations coming in? Because to maintain a culture of the most loved place to work, the biggest challenge is counterintuitive to most people, because they're sitting there. I know the audience right now is saying, oh, of course, working for TaylorMade, I would love that all day long. Until they have to sit in traffic on the 5 freeway in California or some other thing that they have to do away from their family. And they realize, I better love this place, because I'm going to spend a lot of time here. How do you manage the expectation when people come in with such high expectation of working in sports?
Well, thank you for the question. It's a very provocative question too, because you're spot on, David, which is all these great experiences that are part of our sport and our brand, right? These world-class athletes, these industry-leading, innovative, technically advanced products, these wonderful social engagements with our brands, with influence all over the world, in and outside of golf, in the association with this very cool sport. At the end of the day, we run a business, right? And I have the responsibility in my role to ensure that I make the right decisions with our senior leadership team and across our broader leadership teams in the organization, that those decisions lead toward better business practices and better business results that ultimately support the needs of our people and enable us to perpetuate not only the culture, but the business over time and create value for our shareholders, right? That's a lot to say.
And it's a lot to hold up to.
It's a responsibility.
Especially the shareholder value part.
So I moved out to Southern California in 1998. That's where our world headquarters are at TaylorMade. And I will never forget my first day walking into the office. And David, you've been there. You walk into our world headquarters, and before you even get in through the front doors, there's this majestic building with our brand header on the top of the building. In my 21 years at TaylorMade, there hasn't been a day when I'm in town walking into that office, rain or shine, that I don't stop and look at that header for a moment and think about the privilege that it is to work for this organization, the privilege it is to work for this organization. And so I never take it for granted. And to your question, I don't think any of our people do. But to your point about the balance between all of these exciting sport-related endeavors and the reality of a business and the work that's done in between to find success in both, it goes back to our core values. And you might say, well, where is he going with this? The reality is every one of the 2,200 people that work for the organization have been hired to those values. When we hire, we ensure that we work through originality, relatability, competitive, and golf domestic. Examples in their prior experience, examples in how they think, how they correlate their love for the sport or their love for the brand with the technical capabilities of their jobs or what they're interviewing for. And then we train on it. So it's not just through the process of onboarding, which is recruiting and then bringing individuals in the organization. It's about retention, and we train on it. There isn't a quarter that goes by that we're not spending time discussing our values, discussing core strategies in the organization, and how that correlates to the work that's being done in every discipline and cross-functionally in the organization. And that's how we continue to integrate and weave this tapestry of love for the sport, love for the brand, functional responsibilities, disciplines around the business in line with our corporate values. So I would be failing in my role if you were to come into our organization and pull somebody in the hallway aside, or be out on the road and pull a technician aside working with a tour player, or be any in any golf market around the world where we do business, and pull a marketer aside and say, hey, tell me a little bit about your company and most importantly, the values of your company. I think in almost every case, and my hope is in every case, that all 2,200 of our terrific employees, the best employees in our industry, and I think in many regards, the best employees I've ever been associated with, can repeat those four values and articulate them beyond the words. They can define the meaning of them and then correlate that meaning into the work that they do and align that within the objectives of their job. And that's what's enabled us to find success.
Which is incredible, because I always say to be a great leader or a great parent, you have to be annoying in two respects. One is repetitive, and two is truthful. And most people are annoyed by repetition, but that's how human beings learn. And we repeat every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday the values of our company of gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, and effective communication. And to know that I have annoyed thousands of employees in my career and stop people in the hallway and say, hey, remind me what I want you to learn while you're here. And they know that means the values of the company, because that's all I need to know, that if you are gracious and forgiving and accountable and effectively communicate, the company itself will exponentially grow. And it always has in an accelerated manner. The last point or question I have, recently I was appointed one of, I think, the most important roles of my life, which is the chairman of the Napoleon Hill Institute. Napoleon Hill had a great impact in the lineage of that type of learning, of thinking and growing rich, of outwitting the devil, of what I can think about, conceive, I can eventually achieve, or better. I was wondering for you, mindset-wise, doesn't have to be Napoleon Hill, but where did this attitude, this mindset of a desire that I must be what I can be, not just for self, but for my community, for my culture, for others, to elevate myself. And I see that truly as one of the main characteristics of David Abeles, the CEO and president of TaylorMade. I see someone who has a desire that he must be what he can be. He surrounds himself with the similar people and those characteristics of being able to dream, innovate, and actually achieve that which they dream about, or even better.
Yeah, thank you. And congratulations on your chairmanship. That's amazing stuff, and with an amazing organization. No doubt the contributions will be immense. You know, I've struggled with this question for many, many years, to be honest with you, because it's very difficult for me to put the emotions of how I think and feel into words as explicitly as I'd like to. And I take a lot of pride in clarity. I take a lot of pride in being very direct in the things, and very intentional in the things that I say and I do, because I try to model what I believe is right in our organization. I try to articulate what I believe is our true north. I grew up in a family, and I may have shared this with you before, David, that was honestly one of the great nuclear families I could have ever possibly asked for, but a very diverse family in the fact that my father, God bless him, he's going to be 96 years old in January, is a PhD in physics and biochemistry. I mean, a real life scientist and a who's who in American science, to some degree global science. We grew up with astronauts and oceanographers around the table. He was working with NASA, chaired the National Science Foundation, was in both private practice and public practice and education. He's an academic. He's a fascinating human being. It's very uncommon that you find a scientist that has such a deep soul too, right? Because everything in science has to be proven by data, and it has to be fact-based. And the first question you get from a scientist is, you know, I appreciate the theory, prove it. Can't be true unless you can prove it. So that was wired into me growing up, like, how can this be true if I can't prove it? My mother was on the other side of the spectrum. She was a psychologist. I mean, literally a psychologist. So his IQ, in composition with her EQ, was something very unique. And don't ask me how a golf club salesman came from that, but there isn't a day that goes by, even to this day, that I don't think about them both. We lost my mother 4 years ago. Sorry. Most amazing woman that I have ever met, short of my wife, in my life. And what both of them were able to instill in me, my sister, the broader family, were these values that matter to you, starting with family. And this desire to ensure that you do your part to enhance the lifestyles of your family. And so when I started thinking about this question and have been asked this question, how does like the organic nature of your upbringing apply to how you think as an executive? Like, what are these two things, and what do they mean to each other, and what's the correlation? Because every day I go in that office, I'm filled with this desire and this drive to advance and push forward, and at times, perhaps even too far, too fast. But I think that's the innovator's dilemma, right? Which is how many ideas and how many can you implement, and which ones are relevant? So to get back to, I think, this discussion and your question, I try to model as much as I can in my own mind how to apply who I am to what I do. And how do I harness this continuous energy and desire to find new pathways for success in our business with the realities of having to be aligned with 2,200 people in our workforce in and around what needs to be prioritized and what needs to ultimately be executed upon. And so, quite frankly, in a short form, I struggle with it. I struggle with it. I've learned through leadership training, self-awareness development, and a lot of engagement with a lot of great mentors around the world that have different theories and different working styles on leadership, that I needed to be authentic to who I am. I needed to acknowledge that organically, I am just wired, regardless of the science or the substance, or the feel or intuition that my mother would bring into a conversation, that I need to understand that and understand how those emotions and how those actions ultimately affect others around me. And I still do the work today. I still do the work today thinking about myself. I public speak for a living to some degree, right? And there isn't a market around the world that at some point in time, there isn't a microphone or two that's put in front of me. And I think about and prepare for those moments so that whatever I say is authentic to who I am, true to our company, and impactful in who's listening. So it is an area of development for me, and it's perpetual development. It's constant development. And I'm proud of the work that I've done, but by no means am I where I need to be. And yes, at times I stumble. I stumble with the fact that perhaps my ambition, my tenacity, my drive isn't directly aligned with somebody else's in our workforce, and that can be overwhelming at times.
Sure.
So I need to step back and see that and understand that. But I will say this, coming back to where we started, you know, one of the values, the competitive nature of who we are, when you hire people that are truly competitive at their core, and you're talking to one right now in everything that I do, much to my wife's dismay. And I'm not going to turn that off, because then I would be turning off who I am. And that's, I can't do that. I can govern it. I can monitor it. I can understand it, and I can portray it. But I need to utilize it in such a way so it's motivational to our teams. But when we hire people, there's a competitive thread, a red thread of competition that ties all 2,200 amazing individuals at the TaylorMade Golf Company together, that enable us to never accept mediocrity as a form of success. We will not do that. And I can tell you right now, we've never been better positioned to advance our company than we are right now.
And proof is, when you are one of the most loved places to work, and so relatable to me, one of our shared relationships is my younger brother, who is a Harvard scientist and a soulful leader. So I know and can see where that came from. If you want to learn to be original and to have a desire that you must be what you can be, to be competitive and relatable, but also maybe even be a golf-timist, me, a pop-timist, I think you need to explore how TaylorMade was built, where they come from and where they're going and what they're becoming. Because I think if more companies and leaders around the world understood the culture that exists at TaylorMade and the leadership that is present there, as I've seen for over two decades, the incredible David Abeles, the CEO and president of TaylorMade, a testament to why we do this show as the executive spotlight. I'm David Meltzer, here on Office Hours.